I'm speaking today with Mike Knox, who is running for City Council in District A. Mike, first question I'd like to ask, why are you running for this office?
Well, I'm running for this office because I feel like that in the last couple of election cycles, those of us in District A have elected people that I think are more interested in their personal and political agendas than on the district itself. And I want to bring that back and start focusing on the district. We are experiencing a revitalization effort in this area, and I think we need someone who can focus on the core issues of the city, which are public safety, infrastructure, and the delivery of city services.
Okay. Now, you've been an HPD officer for 30-some years.
Well, no, for 15 and a half years.
Sorry.
I was with HPD for 15 and a half years. I've been a consultant for another 19.
Ah, okay. All right. My apologies for the confusion there. Tell me what you've done with the police department. Tell me about your career and what you did.
Well, as all policemen, I started off as a patrolman. I spent my patrol years in Northeast and North Shepherd area. Then I became an investigator for the juvenile division. From there, we went to general investigations at the Westside Command Station. And while there, my partner and I discovered this issue called gangs. And so we pitched an idea. We did the research and did the training and pitched the idea of starting a gang unit, which the city went for. And so we started the first gang unit in the city of Houston. And from there, I gathered some expertise. I wrote a book on the subject and then had an opportunity to get that book published and, of course, go out then on my own as a consultant. And one of the reasons I decided to do that was because the city of Houston Police Department does not permit police officers to provide the public with opinion advice. So I was limited in my speeches about gangs to what I call show and tell. Gangsters look like this, they dress this way, they commit these crimes, they carry these weapons, they're bad. Everybody already knows that. And what I detected was a need in the community for more information. Why is it that kids join gangs? What can I do as a parent, or what can I do as a neighbor or as a community to stop that activity or to restrict it or make it less a less problem in our area? And so that's why I wrote my book, and that's why I started that consulting business.
Okay. And, you know, I mean, obviously, as a council member, you would have some opportunity to, you know, shape the policy,
exactly,
the way HPD deals with this kind of crime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where do you see an opportunity for council to do something to help HPD perform better, not just in this, but sort of overall?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the specifically about the gang issue, one of the things that the city can do is encourage the police department to really reinstitute a gang unit that's actually involved in intelligence gathering as opposed to zero tolerance. Ever since 9/11, most police departments have gotten away from the intervention of gang activity to a mere response to or dealing with, you know, just arresting bad guys. So I would like to see that happen. Also, I think out here in the northwest part of town, we have one of the smallest police stations. Now, I understand why that is, because this area has probably the lowest number of calls for service than any other part of the city. But it's a great opportunity for this area to be used as a testing ground or for new technology that's coming up. So I would like to see the police department start to use the northwest substation and this area as a testing ground for new technology to enhance the number of officers that we currently have.
Yeah, you talk about technology. One thing that I've heard in talking to candidates in previous elections is the way HPD interoperates with the other law enforcement agencies in mm-hmm. and around Houston. There's many of them. Sheriff, oh, yeah. Metro, the school districts, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that has to do literally with the technology, the communications devices, and part of it is more a matter of process and protocol. You know, where do you see opportunities, you know, for that to be improved, again, from the perspective of someone on council? What can you do to help with that?
Well, I can work with the county officials in this area, the commissioners, Cagle and Raddick, who control, you know, the northwest part of town. And maybe discuss or find ways we might be able to work together to lower costs for both entities. That would be sharing radios, for example, radio frequencies, a dispatch office. There's perhaps share the jail, you know, let the county take over the jail.
There's already proposals on that.
And I'm interested in looking at ways to save money that way, that we could turn back into more policemen or, you know, better equipment, what have you, that we need for HPD. Now, as far as creating a metro police agency that covers it all, I don't see that happening in your lifetime.
I'll say that would take a legislative act anyway. way.
Yeah, so that's not going to happen. But we certainly can work together more closely. And we do have a good relationship, I think, with the constables and the police, the other police departments in this area with HPD. I think they have a really good working relationship, but there's always areas to be improved on that.
Now, public safety is the single biggest part of the city's operational budget.
Yes.
And, you know, when I talk to people, when I talk to candidates, I generally get messages about the need to control costs and you know, rationalize and cut and understand and audit and so on and so forth. But when it comes to that single biggest part of the budget, public safety, everyone is like, well, you know, we don't touch that. We want to increase that. And I always wonder, you know, it is the single biggest part of the budget. Surely there must be some ways in which we can find some efficiencies and savings in there.
I'm sure you're aware of a guy named Maslow, right? Mm-hmm. Psychologist guy. Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Mm-hmm. You can't do anything until you feel safe. You can't eat, you can't sleep, you can't work, you can't do anything until you feel safe. So one of the core responsibilities of any city is to provide for the public health, safety, and welfare of the people in the community that they serve. So that is naturally going to be the largest part of your budget. Now, certainly there might be some areas that we can find some savings in, but we need to turn that savings back around into more officers or more equipment or something else that they need. So I hate to tell you this, but you know, we probably should let me back up here. When I do a budget, or when I'm looking at what I want to take care of in my own household budget, I take care of my mortgage, I take care of my taxes, I take care of my gas, I take care of the things that are important that are going to keep me functioning and running. And that's what the city has to do as well. And part of that is the provision of police and fire, other health services, and ambulances, and that sort of thing. So we've got to take care of that first. When that's taken care of, then we spend the rest of the money on other issues, because we can't do anything until we're safe. Now, that's not to say that we can't find ways to do that. And one of the things that I would like to work toward is changing the way the city does its budget, actually, from a projected income format to a last year's income budget. In other words, a zero balance budget. And a zero balance budget, each department head would then have to justify every dollar that they say they need for the upcoming year. And it's in that process that you can discover some of these old projects, these old programs, things that are no longer functioning or maybe duplicated in some way, and start cutting those out, and you'll find your savings in that way.
Now, another issue related to the budget and to public safety has to do with the pensions. The main point of contention is with the fire department and the firefighters' pension fund, which is not subject to meet and confer as the police officers and municipal employees' pension funds are. Mayor Parker has been trying to get the legislature to pass a bill that would require meet and confer. The firefighters have fought against it, and so far they've held off. Mm-hmm. Do you support the efforts to pass a bill to require meet and confer for the firefighters?
Well, actually, no, I don't support that, because primarily the issue is basically a personality conflict between the fire department and the mayor. The Houston Police Department also used to have the same program as the fire department years ago. And when that program changed, when we went to the meet and confer, we were led to believe at that time that the city would honor its ARC payments every year. Well, that's not been the case. And so the fire department is looking back in history, seeing what was promised to the Houston Police Department and to the other civilian employees unions, and the city is not fulfilling its promises in that area. Why should they, if we go with meet and confer now, why would they fulfill their promises to us in the future? And therein lies, I think, some of the difficulty. A lot of our difficulty with the pensions, the unfunded liability, has more to do with the city's unwillingness or inability to pay on an annual basis their promised amount than it is the fault of the fire department, the police department, or the civilian employees. Now, having said that, I can say that now might be a good time to think about the future. We have to honor the promises that we've made in the past and to our current employees. But there's an opportunity here to work with the unions and maybe go forward with a different kind of program for future employees that might include some a model like they use in private industry with the 401k type of model, where it's a defined contribution instead of a defined benefit. And in that way, the city can control its future costs, giving the responsibility for individuals to go ahead with their own retirement plan, and they can do that through the union or whatever private organization that they want to do. In other words, the city would then be out of the pension business, which would save us a ton of money in the future.
Yeah, I mean,
now getting the fire department and the police department and the civilian unions to go along with
I kind of think that would be a bigger fight than
actually, you know, it could work out because, I mean, you're talking about individual accountability and responsibility. Each individual policeman, fireman, and city employee could continue to contribute through their union to their pension fund, and then the pension fund could distribute the pensions as when they retire. It's just the city's out of it. The unions would have probably like that because then the city's not meddling in their business anymore. And it also places the unions in a very powerful position with future employees.
Yeah, well.
So there may be some positive for them, and there would be some big positives for the city.
Well, devil's in the details,
that's,
I guess.
True.
What do you see as the main priorities for District A, and what would you do about them if you were elected?
Well, some of our main priorities are the transportation issues. We've got to get some roads done and some drainage issues fixed in District A. And that's going to require a great deal of effort and some time. Somebody's going to have to focus on that full time throughout the next several terms. And what I mean by that is the Long Point Project, which has been on the books as long as I've lived here, which has been 23 years. We've been talking about widening Long Point. That road gets done in fits and starts. We've done a few intersections. There's another one little section of that road that's about to be started. But we need to finish that road from Conrad Sauer all the way to, or actually Whitty Road, all the way to the Hempstead Highway. It's important because that's going to kickstart the revitalization of the area. It's going to cause businesses to take a look at this area and maybe put new businesses and better shops and more restaurants. Things that are going to draw people into this area, that's going to uplift the entire community. I think that's the key thing right there. And there's also other roads that we need to work on. Our apartment complexes need some work. We need somebody to focus on those and get them to upgrade or remodel or do something where we can stop this trend of older apartments creating petri dishes for crime in the neighborhood. If we can get the support of those apartment owners, that would be great. If not, somebody needs to start inspecting them every day, if necessary, to get their attention. And that's one of the things that I think that I want to do.
Okay. Well, I mean, if you're going to talk about apartment complexes, often the problem that we find is that we don't always know who owns them. You know, the ownership isn't clear, someone's out of state, you know.
Oh, we know who owns them. That's in the public record. A lot of times they're owned by a corporation in New Jersey or somewhere.
Right.
But we always know who owns them.
I guess what I'm going is it gets difficult to pursue the legal means to get them to do what they're supposed to do. But anyway.
Yeah, that is a problem, but it's not undoable, and it just takes attention and focus and, you know, focusing on that issue.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk a little more about the neighborhoods and quality of life.
Okay.
Because, you know, Houston is, you know, experiencing a lot of development in many parts of town. Mm-hmm. Recently overhauled Chapter 42 of the development code to allow for more density in outside the loop now. And, you know, I think everyone agrees that needed to be done, and, you know, it's the goal is to get more development in the city. But, of course, we've seen that around the city there are some places where developers want to build something, usually something multi-story and multi-unit, and maybe the neighborhood doesn't want. I mean, the Ashby High-Rise is sort of the
right
base case here, but we're seeing it in the Heights, we're seeing it in River Oaks.
And we're going to see it in Spring Branch very soon.
I'm sure we will. So how do you balance the needs between the developers who want to build these things, mm-hmm, and the neighborhoods that want to have some more say over what does get built?
Well, we live in an unzoned city, and that's a problem for on a number of levels. On the other hand, it's also a blessing. So I think the Chapter 42 issue is a double-edged sword. There's a yin and a yang to it. The bad part is that it is going to affect neighborhoods that have been unwilling or unable to protect themselves through correcting their deed restrictions or going under the protection of the Chapter 42 issue, which is provided in that chapter. And I would encourage all the neighborhoods around Spring Branch to either adjust their deed restrictions to prohibit the kind of development that we're talking about there, the T-lots and the flag lots and the multi-stories and all that, or protect themselves through the use of that Chapter 42. On the positive side, it also now makes it possible for larger investors to come in and buy out some of these small, more dilapidated apartment complexes and then build a townhome complex in them. Well, doing that is actually going to reduce the amount of impact on the infrastructure. Less people can live in a townhome environment than they can in an apartment. So you have less water flow and less electricity use, less traffic. So that could be a positive thing. And the neighborhoods, I don't think, would mind that because the apartments are already sort of a gated community anyway. So the only difficulty then would be the 6, 7, 8-story ones. That might be a problem. I think the people who are going to build in those areas will take that into consideration and would probably construct something not quite as big as Ashby Towers in Spring Branch. But in the end, if it's their property and they own it, they can do with it what they will.
Yeah. And that.
And I'm okay with that because that's the way America should be.
All right. Houston is also gaining a reputation around the country as a great place for food.
Yeah.
At restaurants. Food trucks are at the forefront of that revolution. And as you know, they've been trying to get the council to approve an ordinance that would allow them to operate downtown and in the medical center. It's still unsettled before council. It's likely to come up again. Mm-hmm. Is that something you would support, changing ordinances to allow the food trucks to operate downtown?
I think the problem that I see with trucks operating downtown is they carry a lot of propane with them, and that creates an explosion hazard. But if there's some way to avoid... to make it safe to do that. I don't see any reason why downtown should be different than any other part of town. What I would like to see changed, however, with the mobile food vendors is I would like for them to remain mobile. What our problem out here in District A is that we have mobile vendors that are fixed locations. They never move. They move once every 24 hours to go get cleaned up. They come right back to the same spot, which actually has an impact on some of the surrounding restaurants around. So I would like to see an ordinance that would require mobile vendors to actually be unable to remain in a single location more than 4 hours, and so that they're forced then to move at least twice a day somewhere within a 24-hour period, because the name of their thing is mobile food vendors. I think they should remain mobile. I don't have a problem with them working downtown. I think they provide a good service. Now, an exception to the four-hour limit would be if they're contracted for an event or, a private function or something like that. But generally, I'd like to see them stay mobile, come into downtown during lunchtime. People want to walk out there and grab a carnita or whatever it is that they want to get from. Some of them are like a pretty exotic food choices on those trucks.
Something pretty high-end.
Yeah, and I think if people want to do that, there's a need for it. Go for it. But I think the only real concern really is that in the downtown area, if an explosion from one of those propane tanks might be a problem.
Okay. In 2001, there was a charter amendment passed in the city that forbade it from offering domestic partner benefits to its employees.
Mm-hmm.
The world's a little different now. The Supreme Court made its ruling to overturn the Defense of Marriage Act. It's at the federal level, but we're seeing in Texas, even various cities and some school districts passing ordinances to allow domestic partner benefits for their employees. Now, there's been talk for a while. I don't know when or if it's going to happen, but there's been talk for a while of there being another charter amendment effort to overturn the 2001 amendment and allow the city to offer domestic partner benefits. Is that something you would support?
Probably not.
Okay. All right, fair enough. I'm asking everyone these questions,
yeah.
So you understand. I'm also asking everybody, who are you supporting for mayor this year?
Well, I'm running my own race right now, and I really haven't had time to really look into it. I'm at this point, I'm not supporting anybody for mayor at the moment. There's nobody in that race that I'm prepared to vote for at the moment.
Okay. And as you know, there are a number of candidates that are running in District A this year,
yes, there
including
are.
The incumbent and the previous incumbent. When people go to vote in November in District A, why should they vote to make you the next council member for District A?
Well, I think I'm the only candidate in the race who's interested in the district itself, and for no other reason. I've invested heavily in this area. I have, by that I mean, I lived in this house that we're sitting in now before it was new. I lived in that house for 10 years. We tore it down and built this house that we're sitting in now on it. This is the last house that my wife and I are planning to live in. We're going to die here in Spring Branch someday, hopefully not soon. But so I'm interested in seeing this area continue to prosper. I made this decision to tear the old house and build the new one because I saw the potential and the beginnings of this revitalization. This is going to be the best place in Houston to live in the next 5 to 10 years. And I want to be a part of making that happen. So I'm interested in District A, not for the power and the prestige and all of that. I'm interested in it because I want this area to be the best it can possibly be. And someday, when I need to go to an old folks' home, I'll be able to get quite a bit of money for this house and be able to live without my son having to pay for it in the long run, which I think in the long run is what we all want. We all want our investments to grow and do better, and we all want to live in a nice, safe, clean environment. We want the best that we can have in our world, and that's what I want, and that's why I'm running for District A.
Mike Knox, thank you very much for talking to me today.
You're welcome.